I am Jimbo Paris, and you are listening to the Jimbo Paris Show. All right, how's it going, everyone? This is Jimbo Paris. Welcome to the Jimbo Paris Show. And today we have Dr. Mohan Ananda, and he is a CEO of the International Acquisition Corp. And he basically, he operates sort of a blank check company, and he's the executive expert of the Second Opinion. And again, very successful man. Let's see what he has to say.
Thanks a lot. Thank you.
Okay, great. So can you tell me who you are, what you're about, and what your message is?
Yes, let me start a little brief background. I came as a student from India in 1967. So it's much older than you, many years ago. And I came to Pasadena, in beautiful part of Southern California, as a student at Caltech, California Institute of Technology. And then I lived throughout the rest of my life in Southern California. I have three stages in my professional background. I started as a scientist. In fact, I have a PhD in astrophysics, worked with NASA on interplanetary travel. And also, I'm kind of one of the key architects for GPS, Global Positioning System. So that's my science-related stage one. Then I became a lawyer. And I've been a lawyer, of course, ever since. And I helped with technology companies, intellectual property areas, starting, raising capital for them. So things of that type, my second career. Then I converted that into become an entrepreneur. And I have my own, started a number of companies. Some are failures, some are successful. I took three companies public. Actually, this is the current one, fourth one, is the four companies public, and I have raised over $1 billion in the public market. And I also, one of the companies I started, I sold it to, it is a public company, then I sold it to a private capital people for $6.6 billion. So that's kind of a summary of my background.
All right, excellent. And you have an extremely impressive track record. You know, you've accomplished quite a bit.
Thank you.
So where did this passion begin?
You know, I came as a student, my interest was doing something very innovative, I mean, scientific. Because of course, and when you're young, you always think of creating something wonderful. So that was my interest. Then as I did a lot of interesting things. Actually, I used to be, traveling throughout the world, actually, and also I happened to be more of a liaison for United States with the NATO countries on GPS, because GPS is a weapon system. So, but since I was traveling, and my wife is also a physician, so she's very busy working. So it kind of made me to say that maybe I should change my career. And that's how when I became a lawyer, because I don't need to travel a lot. So that transition happened. But while working with as a lawyer, I started working with very, very smart people, starting companies, so I thought maybe I should follow them and became an entrepreneur myself. So passion is more of a transition. The initial was science, but then I knew as you get older, you cannot be that creative. If you go back and look at all the Nobel Prize winners, most of their work, 90% of their work was done when they are young, below 30 or around 30. But as you get older, so I knew maybe I'm getting older, so I want to become more of a businessman, not looking at fundamental science. That's just a kind of an add to what I said.
What do you think was your first step into science as a child?
Coming back from India, parents always like people to get good education. So that's kind of something I'm, socially I'm used to. So I used to be a good student. I mean, I am still a good student. But the good students end up in science. So in mathematics, applied, of course, science is practically mathematics in the sense. So I was good in mathematics. That's the how I ended up in. So I wanted to do more like astrophysics. Physics is, you know, solving fundamental questions of universe or science. So that's how I ended up in.
Do you think your experiences in India may have helped you as a scientist, the culture?
I don't know, because I was young. Of course, you know, there the parents always support or insist you go to school and you study well. I mean, that is very much, at least in the family friends I know. You know, because the way the parents think, the education is the best wealth you can give it to the children, because they can use the education to be successful. And I still believe in that. Education is the way to change the world, and people have to be knowledgeable to do the right thing.
When you say do the right thing, what do you consider the right thing?
That's a very, very important question. The right thing, in fact, in my religion, I don't know whether you're that familiar with, there is a scripture called Gita. Bhagavad Gita is 18 chapters in a big scripture called Mahabharata. It's a conversation between the so-called the Hindu god Krishna and one of the, Arjuna. There was a war. In the war scenario, there is a conversation. That is the 18 chapters. I mean, it's an interesting story, but the reason I'm bringing up, what is the right thing? This Arjuna asked Krishna and asked about, there is a war going on and I have to kill some of my relatives in the war. Is that, you know, I don't want to do it. So tell me what I should do. Then Krishna tells, look, you have to do the right thing. What is the right thing? You believe in your best judgment. What is the right? You do that without expecting any specific return for you. You know, in business, there is this concept in America or in the world, the return on the investment. So you do to maximize the return on the investment. So people sometimes do things wrong and to get the maximum return. But I don't believe that's the scriptures tells, that's not the way you should do it. You do the right thing without expecting any that payback, but the results will be good for you. It's very hard to say, well, there is nothing written which is right. Like I've been a CEO on different occasions in many companies. I follow that principle. I do what is good based on the best information I have.
And that's a very interesting way of phrasing it. You know, you do what's good based on the information you have, because you could have good people that may not have the most information and they may accidentally do something in other people's eyes, which may be a bad thing.
Yes, that happens. Believe me, that always happens. There are, but you have to, in your own mind, using your common sense, use that to distinguish whether you're getting the right information. So you have to do your homework. But things can go wrong. That happens. But the right thing is based on your convictions. What you believe, this is the right thing to do. That's a tough. Nobody gives you and tell you these are the right things, these are bad things. No, you have to make the judgment. That's your judgment.
And that's a very interesting, you know, philosophy that you have. And can you give an example of when you've actually experienced this in your life?
Every step of the way. For example, when I got my admission to college in America, from India, I had job offer from India. I mean, a good job offer. My parents were very thrilled that I got it, because they didn't want me to go that far. It's a long way from India, and I didn't have any. This is 1967. No friends, no relatives, nobody. So I'm coming to a strange country, a strange way. So they said, you now have a good job. You can be very successful. Why go? They were not really in support of my coming to America. But I said, look, the reason I'm going is not for making money or anything. I mean, of course, you need money to live. But I got admission to one of the best universities in the world. California Institute of Technology in Pasadena. It's in fact another, you know, I would be working with Richard Feynman, a Nobel Prize winning physicist, and I'd be working with the greatest mind in the world. So I said, that's what I'm going to do. I mean, of course, I have to convince my parents, it's okay, nothing will happen, I'll do fine. So as an example, I started from there and I continued to do everything I do. I look at, is this the right thing to do? And then I go.
As we kind of go more in depth in your career, can you talk about the Acquisition Corp a bit?
Oh, that is a very recent. SPAC is a special purpose acquisition company. Mm-hmm. And SPAC is a blank check company, meaning it does not have a company, really. There is nothing is done. You go to the market, meaning to the investors, and say, look, I know what I'm doing. I want to raise money. And I tell them, this is how I am going to. I will find the right company in the space. Like when I went for this pack, I told them, I'm going to do in the digital technology, meaning the up and coming or in related artificial intelligence or anything which is the state of the art. I'm going to find a company and merge, but I need to raise the capital. So I went and convinced the market, then I went for an IPO and raised 230. As a matter of fact, we went for 200 million. We had about $1 billion on the table. People were ready to invest $1 billion. The investment banking people told me, do you want to increase your, you know, raising capital? So I thought about it, but there is a, you know, it's always a good and bad. But I made a decision. No, I'll just use that what's called over allotment, which is 15%. So 230 we raised. So we had a very good support from the investment community, thinking they know, they think or they thought we would be able to come up with the right company to merge with, which we haven't done yet. I'm in the process. Hopefully it will happen soon. As soon as once it is, I can disclose it. I make the announcement. And that's the confidence they had in, you know, all SPACs are like that. Of course, they thought I have a good experience, what I have done. And now it's like a conventional IPO. I've done 3 conventional IPO, which means you have a real company and you go to the SEC and say that, look, there is an S-1 registration and a lot of regulatory requirements. But they are looking primarily at the numbers, you know, how much money you revenue, how much profit or how much EBITDA, things like that. And based on that, you can raise the money. Here in the SPAC world, no revenue, nothing, but they are looking at the people. The team is good, so they will bring the right connection or demerger or de-SPAC and bring the company to the public.
So from what I understand, one company brings together more of the money aspect, you bring together more of the people aspect, and then they come together.
Yes, but they don't, in this demerger, they don't go to any investment. They just come to us and we make an agreement and then it automatically becomes public. General, an IPO is a one company with one step going public. Here, the company is already public and raised the capital and we bring the company to it and demerge it. So it's a easier process rather than the conventional IPO process.
If you could just explain what the demerging is.
Demerging is combination, that is our company. Like, for example, we have this Innovative International Acquisition Corp is the company which is actually registered in Cayman Islands. The reason is most companies are registered in Delaware in the US. But the reason we did it, we may have a potential company outside the US. And if it is aware, if a company is outside the US, to bring it together makes it a little bit more. It can be done. People have done it, can do it, but it is more cumbersome. But if you start with a Cayman or an outside company, then the demerging will become much simpler because the regulatory requirements, filing papers, that makes it much simpler and it's faster. So that's the reason we did it. And now, once we find the company, could be anywhere, Europe, Asia, doesn't matter. Then we bring the, we submit, again, you have to go through the regulatory requirements, like filing the, what we call S4. And if it is a overseas type, sometimes F4, that papers have to be filed. And also they have to make sure that everything is done properly. Then you have to get a shareholder approval. Our shareholders have to say, okay, this is a good merger, or this is the right company. And once you get the approval, then you become listed in the company. That's the process.
So I think this is a great stage to actually get into your experience in stamps.com as well. You were the founding chairman. Can you get into that as well?
Yes, certainly. That's the place I'm sitting, that's where I started the company. So that was 25 years ago. At that time, I started doing research myself and applying for patent for myself. And when it's 92, I came up with this so-called patent application for e-commerce. It's a high patent. I have four patents in that space, and all of them are like foundational patent in the e-commerce. Now you see e-commerce everywhere. The whole world is in the e-commerce space. But when I started, there was practically no internet. Internet is just starting. But I saw the growth in that space. And I created that, that technology or platform, which is basically very, very simple, even looking back. But at the time, it was not understood. It is a very secured communication through internet. And to make sure, like if you know the SaaS or the software as a service, that thing, you are basically providing the capability to a customer, but you're kind of you're the developer or the provider in charge. But they can use it, but you control. So you know how they use it. So that technology was developed. Of course, there have been amazing new improvements subsequently, but mine is more like a foundational patent. With that patent is how the stamps start. The stamps, the concept is, I don't know whether you're familiar with Pitney Bowes machine, Franklin machine, which of course is a machine which has a gadget with which then you can print stamps. So it's secure because of the gadget. I said, you don't need any gadget. You can use any computer and do the same thing, which is really because you're printing money now. Of course, you can't do it without the approval of the United States Postal Service. And either they approve or they don't. If they approve, you're in good shape. But if they don't approve, you have nowhere to go. But this technology is the way you could do it, because you can securely print money and you can control. I mean, of course you can print, meaning you have you can clearly identify it, who did it, how it did, how much it, everything is you can control, or somebody can know, meaning whoever the authorizing person can. But anyway, the technology was developed. And it's a very hard job to convince. Of course, you have to raise capital to start a company, but nobody would. I went and talked to many venture firms. They liked it, but they said they can't put any money in because USPS has not done any new technology, and if they don't approve, you're out of it. So if they get the approval, you get the approval, then come back. We can talk about it at that. But anyway, so I had to put my own money into it. But I went and talked to the USPS. And of course, finally we got. So it's a hard work. They approved. And then things start evolving and the company became.
After this, you sort of got into telemedicine as well.
Telemedicine is another, of course, in my opinion, it's the most innovative thing. The reason being, the practice of medicine over the last however years we know has been similar. People go to the doctor, and in my family, we have a lot of doctors. My wife is a physician. She's a neurologist. And my son is a neurosurgeon. And I have many relatives, a lot of, in fact, in my family, close family, there are 27 physicians. And also a lot of friends we meet, they're all physicians. We talk about medical things, but the actual service, providing service, healthcare service, is not changed very much. People go to the doctor looks at, and they prescribe, and things like that. So I thought maybe one of the things to think about is using technology into healthcare service. So that is when we started the so-called second opinion. You don't need to go to anybody. Use the telemedicine platform. Of course, the pandemic made it very, very, almost needed because they didn't want to go. And that is happening. And that company, Second Opinion Expert, is doing very well. They provide various kinds of remote services. In fact, now one of the things they're working with is the remote sensors various with people can have. So they don't need to go to the emergency room. They don't need to go to the hospitals if something happens, because remotely the physicians or the team can check on it and make sure, and then they can provide the appropriate service without really transporting the patient, unless, of course, it is serious, something very important. But otherwise, about 70 to 80% can be all taken care of in a remote environment. So the telemedicine is the, I think it'll be the future for the medicine throughout the world.
Kind of, we could go back more into your own personal life. How did it feel like being an immigrant?
Yes, I wrote a book. This book is called Autobiography of an Immigrant. Mm. And, it has, of course, you can get each book, meaning digital book. You can get a hardcover, and you can also get a soft cover. And also it has an audio book. So you can, just listen to. So those are all available in Amazon, and I think it's available in Barnes & Noble. I mean, different places. In fact, I recently got the same book published in India with another publisher, Invincible. I kind of tell my life story as an immigrant in that book. So I'm like an open book. If anybody reads, they will know about me, anything. So it's an interesting, I have personally not experienced any discrimination. However, I have seen quite a bit of discrimination, seen not through myself, but in many ways, in many areas. Of course, when you come as a young student, you don't know anybody, and you just have to, make sure that you act accordingly to get, people like you. You have a desire that somebody, people like you, so that you don't get treated bad. So which was not that difficult for me, because it's a very simple and very active as a student in a very beautiful city, Pasadena. They all looked fine and no problem. But as I start seeing things, especially the discrimination, not really against immigrants alone or immigrants, people of color. So I started seeing that, and you feel kind of that it affects you. Things have changed. And like I was working, this is again in 1968, with Bobby Kennedy for his election. In fact, I was president of the day, the last hotel, when he gave the last victory speech, and I was a few feet away from him. And that meaning, after the speech, within maybe 15 minutes, he got killed. So those are very interesting experiences I witnessed in my, and I have kind of stated in my book what kind of reaction I have based on all those events. I mean, it's a great journey, no question about it. But things are improving, but it is there's more room to improve.
This has been an excellent interview.
Thank you. Your questions are so good. I was not planning to discuss all these things because I didn't think about it. But since you brought up, you kind of triggered a certain thing, and I'm responding to that.
No problem. You get very good responses too. Thank you.
Thank you.
And, you know, just to end this off, are there any final words you'd like to give to the audience? Any final pieces?
My advice to anybody, whether you're young, middle-aged, or old, you should do what you like the best, whatever the time. I think do what you want to do. Don't worry about other things. So same thing for a young person. Whatever your interest is, you sharpen it, enjoy, and do it. Same thing in the people in the middle. Of course, we are happy. Continue to do, but if you want to do something, there is no other time to experience it. It won't be later. There is nothing different is going. If you want something, do it now.
All right. Well, thank you. This has been an excellent interview. You've given some wonderful advice. You've given some great answers. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot. You must be talking to many people, and you will come across all kind of different type of people, and you are so young and energetic. I want you the best in your growth. I thank you for giving me an opportunity to talk to you.
All right, appreciate it. So, okay, thank you all for listening, and we just have to do a few shout outs here. The first thing is Six Figure University. These are a group of entrepreneurs focused on teaching you how to make six figures. Check them out on their website, Six Figure University. All right. And then we've got Judy from LifeWork Systems. She's one of our collaborative partners, and she basically helps improve business infrastructure, an HR superstar. And we also have a YouTube channel. Subscribe to us now. We're growing in subscribers. You're helping us out here, guys, so just keep on subscribing. And additionally, we have a Roku TV channel. Check us out. This episode will also be on Roku TV as well. Thank you again for watching us. Thank you for listening to the Jimbo Parish Show.